You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
And welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of June 6th, 2017, at episode number 316. I didn't plan that out. 666 somewhere. I don't know. It's kind of spooky. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. This week, kind of an interesting week. some stories here that are going to, I don't know, maybe test your patience. And you know me, I tell you the truth. No matter where the truth takes you, you have to allow it to go there. You have to set aside your beliefs. You have to set aside your opinions. You have to set aside those emotions. And you have to let the facts speak for the truth. And that's where we're going to go tonight. We're going to go to the truth. And one story that's really, really personal to me tonight that came out on Sunday. I knew it was coming. I already had an idea. And I still felt kind of betrayed by this whole thing. But we'll get into that here. We're going to talk more flying humanoid sightings in Chicago. It's not stopping. It's continuing. We'll talk about the thylacine. Was it caught on video? And of course, I was just kind of alluding to this, the wow signal. Was it explained after almost 40 years as one of the largest mysteries for the potential for extraterrestrial intelligence? And we'll also have the MUFON sighting statistics for May of 2017. And we're going to talk about some ghost tools. And yeah, that's where the boat's going to rock a little bit. I know some people are going to be upset. I'm just here to report the news and give you my perspective based on my experience and my background in these fields. And this is I echo this story about this ghost tool. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Patience, patience, patience. That's what we call teasers here in the business. And we'll also have the book of the week, which ties into the biggest story of the week, in my opinion. It might not be your opinion, but hey, get your own show. Just kidding. I don't know. Maybe that's what you want to do. Anyway, this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum now at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106. It's in its biggest location it's ever been in, and the weather is perfect. You need to get out there. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And you can go visit my books. Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist is on sale there. Take your picture with it and show me. That would be really cool. So the news, well, we'll get into the news here in a second. I just want to mention that I just updated right before I came on the air, just updated the ParanewsInsider.com website for the events that are taking place here in 2017. So if you're interested in going to a paranormal conference, paranormal convention, UFO-related, ghost-related, cryptid-related, maybe Bigfoot-specific, I don't know, whatever you're into, check out the list at ParanewsInsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. It's a pretty good list. Now, it's not all inclusive. There's not everything in the world is in there, but I did spend some time last week adding some more ones popped up. So trying to keep on top of it. And I appreciate the info about information about some events. And sometimes I'm usually perfect, but every now and again, I do make mistakes. And therapy is part of admitting that you have a problem, I guess, is part of the therapy. So I do make mistakes. And people point that out to me every now and again when I do screw something up. Because you know, I just, like I said, I was getting ready to do the show and I'm sitting there updating the website at the same time. Don't recommend that, but it's been a busy day for me, but check it out. Paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top and it should give you a lot of stuff. Seems like most of the stuff is here on the East Coast. It's not because I'm here in Ohio that I'm trying to sway that way. It just seems like there's more events that happen out here than anywhere else, but there's stuff all over the United States and I keep it North America. Although I really haven't done any events from Mexico. So I don't really do the United Kingdom or any other countries. I know there's listeners in those countries and I appreciate that. It's just keeping track of the U.S. events and Canadian events is hard enough. But to do everything worldwide would be like a full-time job for me. And I already have one of those. So anyway, I will be at the Kecksburg UFO Festival Friday, July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's the home of the infamous Kecksburg UFO crash of back in 1965. No, I wasn't born yet. I'm old, but I'm not quite there yet. But Stan Gordon, who was there, will be speaking at that event. Myself, obviously, I'm going to be speaking. And also from WCJV, Colin Schneider will also be speaking that same weekend. I don't remember the order in which we're speaking. But anyway, Colin Schneider and a good friend of both of ours, Ron Murphy, will also be speaking there. Colin's going to be talking about Cryptozoology 101. Ron Murphy is going to be talking about Chestnut Ridge, very active location for UFOs. Even for ghost sightings and weird light anomalies, a lot of strange stuff going on there and even Bigfoot anomalies. If I had to say of the most anomalous area I've ever heard of, pretty much anywhere in the world, forget the Bermuda Triangle, forget a lot of these things you're hearing. Chestnut Ridge is legitimate. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on for decades. It just doesn't get the attention that some of these more popular locations get. And Stan Gordon will be focusing on historical local UFO and Bigfoot cases. A lot of those are actually related, UFO and Bigfoot cases together. And also talking about historical and recent UFO, Bigfoot, and cryptid encounters from the area. Me, I'll be talking about the foundation of UFO research and investigation. Excited to do that. I haven't really had the chance to do too much with UFOs over the years, so excited to do that. I've already done, what was that, a ghost event, but I didn't talk about ghosts. I talked about cryptozoology. Also been at a Bigfoot event, but I will be talking about ghosts later on this year. So it's kind of cool to be invited to a ghost-themed event, a Bigfoot-themed event, and now a UFO-themed event to be a speaker at. Makes me sound like I know what I'm doing, I guess. I don't know. Kind of spooky. So again, that's Friday, July 28th through Sunday, July 30th in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, and it's an event beyond all events. It's a festival, so there's street food, carnival rides for the kids, tractor pull for the kids. There's going to be a burnout contest, which I absolutely love. It was awesome. See all that smoke and the smell of the rubber? It was really cool. Big parade, hot dog eating contest, you name it. It's going to be there. A lot of fun. And I'll also be going back to Pennsylvania August 5th to speak at Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is home to a large flood historically. And August 19th, I'll be here back here in Ohio speaking at the Goose Project 2.0. And it's a MS fundraiser at the Prospect Place Mansion in Trinway, Ohio. Always love to do the fundraisers to help out something that's, you know, larger than just the paranormal field or something that actually has a meaning outside of what we do. It's really important that we all come together and help those that that need our help, or we can help an organization for especially a disease such as MS. And again, MS fundraiser at the Prospect Place Mansion in Trinway, Ohio, August 19th. I have more information as we get a little bit closer, but we're going to jump into some cryptid news. Got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. So we're just going to jump in, both feet. So yeah, get your seatbelt on, strap in. It's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride tonight. not because of my voice or anything, but because there's some controversial information that we're going to cover a few times tonight. But this isn't quite controversial. Again, the strange large winged humanoid or owlman or mothman sightings, whatever you want to call it, in Chicago, Illinois, they're continuing to pile up. I think we're at 12 sightings. And one of those, or I should say two of those, is the same sighting, just two different reports. But it's insane. It's really starting to pile up here. Let me see the date. April 7th was the first one of this year, and they're continuing to pile up. So about 2 months, not even 2 months here, and we're already at 12 reports for the year. That's kind of scary. And again, those 12 reports, two of them are the same, so I guess you could say it's 11 reports or 11 instances, and they're all right around the Chicago area. And if you haven't seen the map, let me get this map. It's on Google Maps here, and it's provided by Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters. And he's done a heck of a job at documenting all this stuff, which is very, very important. It's one thing to cover the news or talk about the news, but to document what's going on as it happens is extremely important, because there's going to come a time when something's going to happen with this. Either it's going to be deemed a hoax, or it's going to be deemed possibly legitimate, or it's going to be explained as something logical, which is kind of I'm between logical explanation and hoax, elaborate hoax. But I don't know. The longer this goes on, the more the hoax thing is going to dry up, unless this was very, very, very well planned out in advance with multiple people involved, which would probably be the most elaborate hoax in paranormal history, which then it still does very good justice for us to keep record of this. And yes, this map that I just put in here, every time he gets a case, it is updated right away. So you can use the same link over and over. Yes, you can keep it. Well, don't keep it. I mean, it's everyone's property. You can't keep somebody's link. That's a joke. But yeah, you can keep that link. That's the same one I use. I put it in the chat room each week, and it is updated as the events are notated. So again, he's continuously updating the story as it happens, which is very, very important, especially for people like me that are keeping track of it. And hopefully somebody in the Chicago area is really paying attention to this and possibly following up on these reports. And I'll tell you what, I wish I had some vacation time, because that's where I would be right now. And a report was turned in to Lon himself, Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters, on Saturday, June 3rd. And the incident occurred near the Lincoln Park area, which is weird because we were talking about that last week. I think in the chat room we were just discussing Lincoln Park, the band and the park in Chicago. And this occurred near the 400 block of North Arlington Place. Both of the witnesses talked directly to Lon. So there was two people that witnessed the singular event. They actually called him directly after the incident. They looked up his information. They tried to find some information on what could, if anybody else was reporting this, apparently. And they got Lon's information, just kind of weird. I'll mention that in a second. It's kind of odd. And they both talked to Lon on the phone, and he said that they sounded very shaken about the sighting and stated that they were both business owners who had just finished up a late dinner in the area. Now, neither one of them had been drinking prior to the sighting. They made that clear. Directly from the report on phantomsandmonsters.com, it states of their encounter, quote, "They both described it as a 7 to 8 foot solid black humanoid with wide membrane wings that resembled those of a huge bat. The wingspan was at least 12 feet. That's huge. The head was prominent and thinner than a human head. The back end of the body was tapered to a point. No legs were noticed, but could have been tucked up under the body. The figure was gliding quickly along the length of the street heading east, then suddenly ascended into the night sky. Neither heard any sound," unquote. And the last line of this report stated that both witnesses felt a sense of foreboding or fear that something bad was going to happen. You know, I'm still holding out, stating that this is more than likely some kind of large winged man-like creature. Is there still a lot of things left unanswered? And we are still not sure that this is some sort of, again, drawn-out hoax, or even you have to consider that maybe somebody might have mistaken something in 2011 when these things started, and maybe somebody saw these reports and knew about it and thought they saw something else, and one thing's led to another. Now there's a little bit of mass hysteria happening. So that could be part of it being an elaborate hoax. Maybe not intentional hoax, but maybe mass hysteria, even though it's not really front page news in Chicago. But again, with the mounting reports and a variety of people seeing it, we should start to see some patterns forming pretty soon if it is in fact a hoax that might give it away. And I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to say this on the radio. I'm already seeing a bit of interesting things that I'm starting to kind of string together that might tip this in the direction of some sort of elaborate hoax, or people just really feeding on each other on these reports and kind of getting carried away. But I'm not going to tip those cards yet. But as far as this last one, I don't know. It's just strange to me that people have the sighting. They're scared, but they're not even going to leave the area, and they're going to try to call somebody who is not really in the Chicago area, who is not really going to help them. I mean, if you're that scared and you feel threatened, I mean, personally, I would call the police, or I mean, heck, even the fire department, somebody of authority. And, you know, no offense, Lon. I mean, you're a very authoritative figure and very knowledgeable in the anomalous fields. But I don't know if that's the first person I call. But then again, you have to consider people with ghost problems don't always call people that they should. They don't call priests, or they don't call the police. They call these random ghost hunters, you know, or email some ghost group from gosh knows where, and, you know, and invite these strange people into their home who may not have any kind of background. So you never know. But it just seemed a little funny to me, that part of the story. But it's weird that these sightings are specifically saying some of the strange things. The wingspans have been described pretty much between 10 and 12 feet consistently, 7 to 8 foot tall, very consistently. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. And most of these sightings have happened pretty much on the south side of Chicago. I don't know what that says. I don't know what that means, really. I don't know. But again, as we get more reports, you're going to start to see a lot more. The more information that comes out, the more you can correlate this information, and the more you can get a better picture, overall picture of what might truly be happening out there. And again, huge thanks to Lon Strickler at Phantoms and Monsters. And you can read all those reports at phantomsandmonsters.com. And again, keep that link if you're in the chat room. I've already posted it through social media, gosh, what, the last 2 or 3 weeks. So if you go to the Paranews Insider Facebook page, you can find that map, and it's updated, continuously updated. But I will be posting that throughout the week, as well as I make my posts through the week. And you can see see where it's going on. If you're in the Chicago area or going to be visiting, keep your eyes in the skies. My goodness, it's crazy. And we'll see. I haven't heard anything in the last couple of days, so who knows? Maybe it's calming down. I don't know. But I'd sure hope that this just doesn't fade away. That's my fear, is that we're going to be left with a mystery. And I love solving mysteries, but I can't stand when stuff is not solved. It just drives me crazy. But I don't know. I think something's going to give with the story. We might be, you know, let down or truly excited by the outcome, but I hope we do get an answer sometime. And this is definitely shaping up to be the biggest story of the year. But you never know. We thought we had some stuff happen until these clown sightings started happening last year. So we'll keep an ear out, keep an eye out, and well, I guess that's it. That's all you can do, right? Keep your ears and eyes out. So let's talk thylacine. This has been my best friend for I don't know how long, months. Lots of talk about the thylacine in the news, not just in Australia, not just in Tasmania, but here in the United States. People have really been interested in this creature. And on May 30th, a video surfaced on YouTube of what was said to be a photograph of a thylacine caught on a trail camera taken sometime in 2016. And if you've been listening to the show or you've been listening to or watching Paranormal News, you know that there's been an organization that's been putting out videos. They put out, I think, 3 or 4 of them so far, and they were really, really questionable. Now, this photograph, if you see this, is hands down, it's definitely a thylacine. The striping, the body structure, the tail, everything points to it being a thylacine. It's legit. But is it real? That's the question. Is the photograph in this video real? So you have to start to disseminate this information. And the video stated that this creature was captured on camera near Ellendale, Tasmania. And Tasmania, well, the thylacine itself, or Tasmania tiger, disappeared from Tasmania in the 1930s, with the last known living thylacine dying in captivity in 1936 at the Hobart Zoo. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, and before the Tasmanian tiger disappeared off of mainland Australia, has not been noted in the fossil record for over 2,000 years. So if it's going to turn up, in my opinion, it's going to turn up in Tasmania. So this is kind of exciting news, but you never really can just get too excited about these things. You really have to evaluate this stuff. Unfortunately, people sometimes try to, you know, they try to fool you. They try to hoax it. So, I mean, if this video was legitimate, it would be astounding evidence of what many people have been reporting in Tasmania and even on mainland Australia, even though I really doubt that it's possible. I mean, anything's possible with animals. You know, I think we underestimate the ability of animals to hide and to elude us. People think they know everything or they could find everything. But these creatures, you know, they were elusive to begin with. Now, one really good source of, I don't know how you put it, I guess paranormal journalism, this website, Where Light Meets Dark, did a great job of looking at this video. And they made 3 points about their video when it was first published on May 30th. And they made it a day later on May 31st. Their points were, first, the creature did certainly appear to be that of a thylacine in the photograph. Completely agree. Second, it is possible to create these types of photographs without there being an actual thylacine alive with current technology. Totally agree with that. So unfortunately, we need to correlate everything. We need to make sure the photograph is legit. We need to make sure the story is legit. The person behind it is legitimate. And even then, it's not going to validate that this was a thylacine. It's just data. It's not evidence. It's not proof. Now, third, they stated that if the story was taken at face value, it seems encouraging and warrants further consideration. Obviously so. But again, you're going to need more than that. But unfortunately for the thylacine, it didn't take long for a sharp-eyed person to find a critical flaw in the presented evidence. A person named Dean Alex, who was commenting on the story through Facebook, noted that the thylacine in the purported 2016 photograph matched the exact body positioning and color to a photograph taken in 1911 and is referred to as the Tucker photograph. So it's the same body positioning of the one that we see in this purported 2016 photo, but just the animal itself, none of the background is the same, but the tail off to the side and the feet and the head and everything matched up, and even the stripes on the thylacine matched up. So it didn't look very encouraging. And then all of a sudden, later on in the day, after the Where Light Meets Dark made their post, later on May 31st, two more videos were published through the same YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel is called Thylacine Sightings Tasmania. And this purportedly showed another photograph of the same thylacine. Now, the weird thing about these, the videos did not have any audio and merely had text to state what occurred. So there was, you know, no voiceover, nothing but just these photographs that were shown on a video. Now, the second image was not readily found in known photographs of the thylacine. That's positive. It's good. But then again, people were very wary due to the convincing evidence of the earlier photograph being a fake. So you have to take it with a huge grain of salt, probably a boulder of salt, because if you find potential fake evidence, it's really hard to believe somebody with another piece of data. So finally, on June 1st, the YouTube channel of the three videos was suddenly closed and the user account was deactivated. And that all signs point toward this reaction more than likely being a result of being caught so quickly with a potential hoax and being called out. Now, the website Where Light Meets Dark does a great job of breaking down the information behind the videos, as well as what would constitute as valid proof of the thylacine. Great research on their part, an excellent write-up on it. And I mean, it's a great read for any researcher, anybody who wants to see through the YouTube-type video hoaxes, which there are so many of. It's overwhelming. They pop up all the time. UFOs, especially, probably the biggest culprit. Bigfoot videos, ghost-type videos with people with fishing line on doors and chairs and all these things. And it's just ridiculous how much misinformation or hoaxes or all the stuff released on YouTube all the time. And how do we know? But how do we know? Maybe this was legitimate. Maybe this person just got upset, right? Well, one last interesting thing is that Where Light Meets Dark tried to save the images. This is a very important thing to do. Anytime you're going to challenge somebody on the validation of their evidence, you want to make sure you get as much information as you can. So if you know the challenge is made, challenges you, you have all this evidence to review this, and you want to look at everything, anything and everything, from their account, what kind of videos they pop up, how long have they been around, and even this is only the second time I've ever heard of anybody finding information like this. Now, what they did was they just simply tried to save the image of the profile of this YouTube channel, Thylacine Sightings Tasmania. Just try to save the image. And when clicking to save the image, if you've ever, you say right click, you try to save an image, and the little box on your computer pops up. And sometimes it has the name of the file. Well, 9 times out of 10, it has the name of the file in there already. Well, the name of the file was thylahoaxchannelpic.jpg. Whoops. So they pretty much planned it out and kind of gave it away. So we definitely know that the thylacine videos that were out for like a day and a half were in fact hoaxed. And again, great job with Where Light Meets Dark on this. Let me get this in the chat room here. And again, it's a great read. So if you're not live in the chat room, you're not getting this link, be patient. It'll be up. See, this is the second story. So it'll probably be up maybe Friday sometime. Don't quote me on that, but I'll definitely get that out. It's an interesting read. I mean, it's worth it. Even if you're not into the thylacine, you're not into cryptozoology, it's still definitely worth the read to see how these things are researched. And you'll get a ton of great information. And so we're at the bottom of the hour, and I want to let you know that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And let's see, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, if you're listening on an archive, maybe it's tonight for you, I don't know. You can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. She's going to be talking with Laura Sunshine. Sounds like an exciting show. Very upbeat, bright. She's an intuitive medium, clairvoyant, mentor, and coach. Again, Laura Sunshine, tomorrow night, Wednesday, June 7th, on Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. And that's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Again, right here on WCJV Radio. .com. And where did I leave off? UFO news. Why not? We'll get into UFO news, and we're going to talk MUFON. And I know last week last week we covered some information about MUFON. Some comments were made on a personal web or a personal Facebook site, and one thing led to another. The executive director of MUFON kind of made a kind of a bad statement, and it upset a lot of people. And I mentioned that Nick Redfern is no longer contributing to MUFON. And I wasn't sure if that was 100%. Well, I got validation that Nick Redfern, as of last week, has stated that he's not going to contribute to MUFON. Whether or not that's going to change, I don't know. But that's a big blow for MUFON. And it's unfortunate that they kind of reacted the way they did to the story. And this could be a very major black eye for MUFON. A lot of people are talking about this. It's not really front page news, but a lot of people in the know in UFOs have heard about this and have been following along. And some people are really, really upset about this stuff. And you have to be really careful how you handle things as a large organization, especially as a nonprofit organization. But I still see MUFON as a very valuable asset to research to a certain extent. I mean, to another extent, things like this don't help, and things like this can damage UFO research. And I still like to do these sighting statistics, even though it's funny. I was rereading a book, which is the book of the week this week, and there was a section about the MUFON sighting statistics. And it was when I read through it, I was like, man, I really didn't think of it that way. It's really the sighting statistics can kind of do both things. It can help or it can hinder. And the collection methods and investigation methods sometimes don't do these things justice. But for me, I think it's interesting to look back at these sighting statistics as something positive, because they are a reflection of things that are being reported. Now, whether or not they're legitimate hoaxes or historical stuff, which I also learned recently that the huge spike in sightings that happened was it last year, 2015, when they had major sightings in June and July of 2015, was actually because of the show Hangar One. And a lot of people were giving historical accounts. So most of these UFO sightings that happened May, June, July, and even August that set records for sightings, a lot of those were historical. They didn't even happen in 2015. They happened 20, 30, even 40 years in the past, but they were just being brought up because MUFON was on television. So when I give you this information about these sighting statistics, you have to take a lot of things into consideration. That fact that maybe these are historical, or maybe that these are just hoaxes. People are just calling things in. Maybe they're drunk. I don't know. Maybe they're doing things they shouldn't be doing, or they're just trying to fool people. And not many of these sightings are weeded out prior to these sighting statistics being put up. So you're pretty much getting what they get. So it is taken with a little bit of grain of salt. But again, I like to stand back and look at this and just really utilize it for the positive. And the MUFON sighting statistics, they've been pretty consistent over the last few years. So it is giving you an overall picture of where sightings are happening. Again, it's just not really a ton of them in any state or any area to really give you what I think is a significant picture of potential things that are really truly happening. But as time goes on, you get these portraits of what's going on. And for me, I like to document this stuff because maybe someday this will show some patterns that we can really dig into and disseminate. It's all about the data. And as long as you collect the data, you can hopefully potentially use that for research down the road. But long story short, the MUFON sighting statistics for May 2017 are courtesy of Audrey Hamilton, who's a MUFON researcher in Northwest Pennsylvania. And of course, Jan C. Harzan, the executive director, who puts that information out there as soon as possible for everybody to view, to look at. Now for April, which is, it's 2 months ago, but it was the last set of numbers that we had, there was 529 worldwide sightings with 343 occurring in the United States. So I kind of felt that it's going to jump up a little bit, but I really haven't seen a whole lot of movement on the last few months. It's been pretty much the same, but you figure that people are going to get outside a little bit more. The weather should be a little bit more nice, even though it's May showers. I kind of felt like, well, you know, there'll be a little bit of a spike in sightings. For May, I had predicted 547 worldwide sightings, which is only a small increase from April, and 359 U.S. sightings, which is a small bump again. Well, I was a bit off. I did pretty much what I would call a horrible job at predicting this year, or this month, I should say, as MUFON reported a total of 624 total worldwide sightings for May. Yeah, I was a little off. 547 for me, 624 for them. Yikes. Well, now this was the highest total all year so far in the sixth month, and the highest actually since September of 2016 when it hit 652 sightings. Now the total 624 worldwide sightings, 470 occurred in the United States. I predicted 359, and I was way off. Now the second highest country was United Kingdom with 38. Canada was next with 35. India had 8. Portugal had 7. Peru had 6. And Norway had 5. Now, additionally, there were 35 more countries that reported sightings, with actually only 22 reporting only one sighting. Now, as far as the top states, there was no surprise. California was number one with 53 reports. And again, that shouldn't be a surprise, because California is number one in population. And that's according to, I use the numbers from the 2014 census estimate. And let's see, number two was Texas with 45. Florida had 32. Arizona had 22. Michigan had 18. Missouri turned in 17. Colorado and New York had 16 reports each. Illinois and Washington each had 15 reports. Oregon had 14, Ohio 13, Alabama, Tennessee, and Maine had 11 each. Louisiana, Pennsylvania, and Virginia had 10 reports each. And New Jersey and Indiana turned in 9 reports each. And it was actually 28 more states that turned in 8 or less reports each. And I like to do a little breakdown of the per capita. So you're taking essentially the number of sightings, dividing by the population for the individual state, multiplying by 100,000, which is the average that you do for any per capita kind of statistics, whether it's on murder or maybe something more pleasant, I don't know, education or jobs or whatever. And unfortunately, even when we do this, we're dealing with percentages when we're talking about UFO sightings. And even if I did per 200,000 people, you don't want to get too carried away with it. But I like to keep it at 100,000. And MUFON used to do this. They don't do it any longer, I think, because of the work involved, or maybe they just felt it was insignificant. But if it's insignificant, then these other numbers really wouldn't mean anything either. So I don't know. Now, if you look at the total U.S. population and the number of sightings here in the U.S., the per capita breaks down to 0.147. Now, obviously, since May has had the most sightings since last year, this is the highest number we've had all year long. Now, California, number one, had a 0.136 with their 53 sightings, which is interesting because that's exactly what they had last month in April. They had a 0.136 with their 53 sightings, which weird. Strange. And again, they're number one in population. Texas was next. Well, I shouldn't say next. They're number two in population, and they were number two with the number of sightings, which falls in line. And they turned in a 0.167 per capita. So, you know, 0.167 of a person per 100,000 turned in a UFO report during the month. Whether it happened that month, we don't know. Florida, which is the number three most populous state, had a 0.160 with 32 sightings. And Arizona, which is number 15 in total population out of 50, obviously, Turned in a 0.326 with 22 sightings. Pretty significant, pretty big. Missouri, they're 18th in population. They turned in a 0.280 with 17 sightings. Colorado, which is the number 22 most populous state, had a 0.298 per capita with 16 sightings. And Alabama, which is 23rd most populous state, turned in a 0.226 with 11 sightings. And the state of Maine also turned in 11 sightings, but they're number 41 in population. So their per capita is a whopping 0.827, which is the highest. It's actually the highest period for this month, let alone the number, you know, for the number of sightings or anything. So it's the highest number of per capita, which is fantastic. And last month it was 0.383. So that's pretty significant. Now, we've had in the past, August of 2016, we had a 1.12. So it was actually Vermont had a 1 per 100,000 back in August of 2016. Maine was close. It's almost like a guy with maybe his hand missing. 82% of a person reported a 82% of one person out of 100,000 turned in a UFO report in the state of Maine last month. So interesting stats there. Alaska, which is the 48th most populous state, this is pretty interesting too. 0.542 four sightings. But again, half of 100,000, half of one person per 100,000 just with four sightings, because it's again number 48th state. There's really not a whole lot of people there. Beautiful state though. So that is pretty much your I'm gonna have to do this on the fly. I did not do a guesstimate for next month. And let me think. What was it? We had let's see. 624. Well, we're going to go, you know what? We're going to go with 685. We'll go 685 total worldwide reports. And we're going to go with U.S. sightings. We're going to go 519. So write those down. That's my predictions for the month of June. 685 worldwide and 519 U.S. reports. Usually I do that days out. I really do. Then I act like I just made it up on the fly. But today, seriously, I just did it on the fly. So that'll be interesting. I think I was just discouraged because what I predicted last time. So we're going to jump to ghost news. I guess we'll do ghost news next. Yeah, this is a little bit of a controversial topic because it deals with the technology. And a lot of people swear by their technology. Me, I swear at the technology because it's not being used correctly. And it really, really irritates me. And this is about the Ghost Box. The Ghost Box is a trusted piece of tech by a lot of paranormal groups. And unfortunately, it's just random radio signals that provide them with what they think is proof of the afterlife. And I've seen these in action for quite a long time. People still swear by them, even though there's a lot of work out there that completely disproves them. But people, they get caught up with what they're hearing, and it sounds like it's correlating with things. I'm not a fan. Now, a story posted by Haley Stevens, who is a kind of a renowned skeptic about the ghost field. She started out as an investigator and has now slowly become pretty much I don't want to say a hardcore skeptic, but pretty much a skeptic, pretty deep skeptic. Now, through her, Haley is a Ghost Geek blog. She kind of echoes my concern for this ghost hunting tech, and she points to a particular sensitive case where a paranormal group in the United Kingdom claims to have gathered evidence about a series of brutal murders involving five children that occurred between 1963 and 1965. The case was called the Moores Murders. And the paranormal group claimed to have found clues about the murders using psychic abilities and EVPs. You got to be careful about that stuff, no matter how long ago it happened. Now, one of the EVPs in questions uses one of the perpetrators' names of these crimes, Ian Brady. And he actually died last month at age 79 while still serving his life sentence. Now, the group claims that the EVP in question says, quote, Brady heard that, unquote. So apparently they were asking questions, and this EVP pops up during a ghost box session where it said, quote, Brady heard that. And if you go to the story at haleyisaghost.co.uk, you can hear these little samples that I'm going to be talking about. And again, that was collected through a ghost box. Now, those that don't know what a ghost box is, it's essentially a little radio that scans stations up and down the dial. Some are quick, some are slower. Some actually use predetermined words and just kind of scramble stuff together. But this one here is just one that goes up and down the radio dial, basically called what I call a radio sweeper. It just sweeps up and down the FM dial. Now, people swear that they consistently hear voices that relate to the particular case they're working on and are convinced that this is done by the work of ghosts, that ghosts are behind what you're hearing on these stations. Now, actually, honestly, it's just radio stations. So, of course, most radio stations deal with speech, obviously, or music. And music, a good chunk of music has words and speech. So, of course, you're going to hear words on the radio. But the thing here comes in when people start to correlate with what they're hearing to these individual cases that they're investigating. So Haley played the clip in question during her podcast, The Spooktator, and it wasn't long until a listener sent her a clip of something interesting. So this is the second story this week I've talked about a listener or somebody, you know, watching in on something that's provided something. And this is great because social media is kind of the cause of some of these hoaxes and misinterpretation things, but can also be a good way to solve things. When you get that out there in mass, people can figure these things out. So a listener sent Haley a clip of something interesting. There's a radio station called Radio X, and they play a bumper that basically announces the radio station, and it says Radio X. And so it draws out the X a little bit. If you go back, if you listen to that clip, go ahead and listen to the EVP first, then listen to this clip that says Radio X, then go back and listen to this purported EVP. You can clearly hear the word radio followed by the beginning of the X, but it's just drawn out a weird way. But it's pretty obvious when you listen to it, but it's cut off by the radio sweeping away from that. And that's actually a great example of what's called pareidolia. And this is how the mind can be folded into forming patterns from random pieces of information. Now, we are essentially hearing what we want to hear from these bits and pieces of voices that are on the radio. So it's saying Radio X, but we're hearing Brady heard that. Not even close. But again, the mind puts together these patterns. Kind of on a different thing here. It's highly unlikely that a ghost would be in control of dozens of local radio stations at the same time or have their ghost hands on a radio dial and be able to make it perform this gibberish into cohesive statements or words. It's really a silly concept that people have about this thing. Now, pareidolia is most known to occur with photographs when people see faces in orbs or in other objects. The same can be said about clouds, walls, pieces of toast. People see images of things in toast. I mean, even a dog's butt. I'm serious. Google it. Type in Jesus dog butt, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Now, if we can be fooled by a dog's butt and seeing Jesus, obviously our brains are not as great as we think they are. We can be fooled by simple things, by light and shadow of the hair on a dog's butt. Yes, it might be known for seeing things, but pareidolia also relates to things we hear as it's essentially forming patterns in our minds from random information. Same definition, same thing. The ghost box and any other device that uses a radio scrambler of any sort should be used as a piece of entertainment only. as there is no evidence, no matter what anyone claims. You can send me YouTube videos. I said this before, and I got a barrage of videos of this is real, this is real. No, it's not. It's pareidolia. It's just lucky tricks. Or some of this equipment actually uses random words that you would never want to use at a birthday party because it would really spoil the fun. And again, entertainment use only. There is no evidence, no matter what anybody claims, that ghosts have anything to do with these ghost hunting tools. And with that, I'm going to drop the mic and walk away quickly from that story before I upset anybody else. But let me put the link in there in the chat room, and you can listen to that at your leisure. Yes, a dog's butt. So other news, the biggest story of the week, and very near and dear to me. I didn't know how to take this story. I was kind of upset, but kind of happy at the same time. You probably heard about this. Professor Antonio Paris has finally revealed to the world that his work on his hypothesis that one or more comets were responsible for what was called the wow signal that was detected back in 1977. On August 15, 1977, at 11:16 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, the Big Ear Radio Telescope in Delaware, Ohio, recorded what is now known as the wow signal. Jerry R. Amon was working on the SETI project, which is short for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which uses various satellites to search for signals in space. And he was given the data the next day. He didn't get it that night. They actually dropped it off at his house the next afternoon. And he saw a surprising vertical column with the alpha numerical sequence 6EQUJ5. That actually represents 72 seconds worth of information gathered from the radio telescope. The alphanumeric code essentially describes the intensity variation of the signal, and it has been given two different values for its frequency within the 1420 megahertz range, which puts it in the hydrogen line frequency. So what does this mean for searching for extraterrestrials? Well, SETI believed that since hydrogen is the most common element in the universe, extraterrestrials might use that frequency to transmit a strong signal. The problem is researchers have been unable to find the signal from the original source, well, which was in the constellation Sagittarius near the Chi Sagittarius star group. Now, Antonio Paris, a professor of astronomy at St. Petersburg College in Florida, he really feels likely. He feels really confident that the signal actually originated from one of two comets that were flying by at the time. Many researchers feel since the signal has not been observed again from the same origin, that it might have been something passing through the area or, who knows, extraterrestrial. James Bauer of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, is skeptical of this hypothesis since the comet would have had to release a significant amount of hydrogen to produce such a signal. Now, Paris stated back in January of 2016, which I covered this story, that in order to rule out the comets, that his hypothesis needed to be tested. I actually donated money for this experiment for him to get his dish and everything in order and to do this experiment. And I was hopeful that maybe the answer would be revealed, and kind of hopeful that maybe it didn't. Now, Comet 266P Christensen was back in that region on January 25th of this year, and the same with the other comet, P2008 Y2 Gibbs. Now, by studying their radio emission and how quickly they move in the sky, astronomers would be able to tell that if this produced the wow signal. And Paris actually does some UFO research, but he's not really completely open to the idea. He's a little skeptical, but he's not completely skeptical. Now, in case you're wondering, this was gathered by the Big Ear Radio Observatory, and it was a large radio telescope that looked like a large concrete pad with two large metal fences standing at either end of it. And one screen was a tiltable reflector screen, and the other was a parabolic curved screen that would receive the signal and then send it to a pair of horns that were located on the concrete deck, and the concrete deck had some aluminum so it would really focus this into these horns. Now, the Big Ear was built from 1956 to 1961 and was first turned on in 1963. And from 1973 to 1995, it was used by SETI to search for signals in space that might have been created by extraterrestrials. The observatory also conducted the Ohio Sky Survey, which collected extragalactic radio sources from 94% of the observable sky from that location. The Big Ear was last used in 1997, and while the Perkins Observatory still stands, the Ohio State Radio Observatory, which had the Big Ear, was disassembled in 1998 due to a variety of circumstances, and the land is now actually part of a golf course. And I was fortunate when I heard the story pop up, I kind of forgot about Perkins and kind of forgot about the wild signal as well. So I did some research and I decided to go down there and visit it before this, you know, this answer came out. And part of me was excited to be in an observatory reading about stars, planets, space, and science. But the other part of me was excited to see what was in this room called the ET radio room. And I knew that there was bits and pieces left of the Big Ear radio telescope. And it was really cool to see all this stuff. There was a copy of the data readout of the wow signal that was hanging by the door. And it actually had notes from Jerry Amon. And he had December 1999, he wrote something, says, quote, "After more than 22 years, we still do not have a definitive explanation of this signal. Although we are able to rule out many suggested explanations, the possibility of this signal coming from an extraterrestrial intelligent civilization cannot be ruled out," unquote. Now, Professor Antonio Perez chose to publish his work on April 1st, which is kind of, you might not want to do that, but he did it in the Journal of the Washington Academy of Sciences, which then accepted his paper, which is titled "Hydrogen Line Observations of Cometary Spectra at 1420 megahertz." Now it's important to, let me just mention this. This is important that these two comets, 266P Christensen and P2008 Y2 Gibbs, neither one of these were detected until 2006. So they didn't know about these back in the 1977, you know, during the collection of the wow signal. They didn't even know they were there. But we do know that they were in the proximity of the right ascension and declination values of the wow signal in 1977. So we know that they were there now. We didn't know they were there then. So that's why this information wasn't gathered back then or even up until 2006. And so now, now we have more information. And the abstract, I'll just read the abstract, which has been kind of quoted already a lot. And it reads as follows, quote, "In 2016, the Center for Planetary Sciences proposed a hypothesis arguing a comet and or its hydrogen cloud were a strong candidate for the source of the wow signal. From November 27, 2016 to February 24, 2017, the Center for Planetary Science conducted 200 observations in the radio spectrum to validate the hypothesis. The investigation discovered that the comet 266P Christensen emitted a radio signal at 1420.25 megahertz. All radio emissions detected were within 1%, which is 60 arc minutes, of the known celestial coordinates of the comet as it transited the neighborhood of the wow signal. During observations of the comet, a series of experiments determined that the known celestial sources at 1420 megahertz, i.e. pulsars and or active galactic nuclei, were not within 15% of the comet 266P Christensen. And to dismiss the source of the signal as emission from comet 266P Christensen, the position of the 10-meter radio telescope was moved 1 degree, or 60 arc minutes, away from the comet. And during this experiment, the 1425.25 megahertz signal disappeared. And when the radio telescope was repositioned back to the comet, the radio signal reappeared. Furthermore, to determine if other comets, or I should say, determine if comets other than comet 266P Christensen emit a radio signal at 1420 megahertz, we observed three comets that were selected randomly from the JPL Small Bodies database. And during observations of these comets, we detected a radio signal at 1420 megahertz. So the last line, which has been put out everywhere, is as follows. The results of this investigation therefore conclude that cometary spectra are detectable at 1420 megahertz, and more importantly, that the 1977 WOW signal was a natural phenomenon from a star system body, I should say solar system body, unquote. So there you have it, the WOW signal, after almost 40 years, it almost made it 40 years, has now been explained. And I'm kind of half excited, kind of half sad. I'm really happy that science prevailed and that somebody could publish a paper, have it peer-reviewed, and have all their work there and approve something. And unfortunately, it takes away from, you know, the UFO believers and the potential for this to be have been a an alien signal, an extraterrestrial intelligence signal. But, I don't know. I'm kind of torn because on one part, it's pretty much SETI's greatest evidence ever. And on the other half, it shows how science can solve problems. And I know a lot of people are upset. They think that NASA and everybody else is part of this major conspiracy to keep this kind of information. But you can't argue science. Go ahead. Go on, get your own equipment and do the same thing. And if you do it right, you'll probably replicate his information. So really quickly, I want to cover the book of the week. And the book of the week, strangely enough, how coincidental is this? This is weird. Weird, wild stuff that the book of the week this week is called Space Science. Okay. And it's written by Antonio Paris. Wow. So Space Science, this is challenges for the extraterrestrial hypothesis of UFO phenomena. Again, written by Antonio Paris. This is his second book. This one was released in 2014. I have an autographed edition of this. Now, I just checked Amazon before coming on the show. They're sold out of this book. I don't know why. Maybe because of this major announcement. But I got mine. So you might want to just put it in your favorites list there, and maybe it'll pop back up. But be warned, this book is skeptical. It is very skeptical, but it's also extremely informative. If you're into UFOs and you're into science and you're into planetary stuff and you want to know the answers to, can we travel to star systems? Can extraterrestrials travel to us? What about signals in space? How does all that stuff work? Well, Antonio Paris answers all that and much, much more. He does a fantastic job of laying all this information out and kind of putting piece by piece together. Now, it's a pretty thick book. It's only 200 pages, though, which is weird because when I first got it, I was like, wow, that's big. But it's got decent-sized print, and it's not hard to read. It's not a science-y book, but it's got a lot of fantastic science information, and it contains a lot of arguments I've had as well about the UFO phenomena. But now this is backed up by somebody who's actually in this field, and he's the founder and director of the Center for Planetary Science. He's an astrophysicist. I mean, he knows this stuff. Computer information systems background and Master of Science in Planetary Science from the American Military University. And he's just all kinds of science stuff background. And he knows this stuff, and he brings it. Now, the book is – it's only got 9 chapters, but like I said, it all kind of puts itself together piece by piece. And he talks about radio signals. Can a radio signal from Earth – you know, we talk about Marconi made the first ever transatlantic radio broadcast. And what about these TV shows that used to use that this information got dumped on into space? How does that work? Well, Paris explains all this, and he explains – SETI, how SETI works, and what the likelihood that we are to get these signals from space and how these things work. And he also talks about extraterrestrials, which is weird because he also talks about physiology, which kind of didn't see that coming. And if you know anything about aliens, you know that the grays are purportedly from Zeta Reticuli. Reptilians are famous for being from Alpha Draconis. or the Orion constellation. The Nordics are from the Pleiades. The Syrians are from the Sirius Binar star system, by popular reports. Well, he goes into depth into these the reasons behind why this is not possible. He goes into these star systems and explains to you what they're actually like. And does talk a little bit of physiology and kind of something I never thought of before. You think about humans. We're formed because of the conditions here on planet Earth. The gravity, the atmosphere, our distance from the sun. All these things are factors, plus a lot of other things, as to why we have two legs, two arms, five fingers, a head, eyes, you know, binocular vision. All these things make us what we are. And you look at Nordics and even grays. Grays are kind of weird looking. Yeah, they have that big head and big eyes, but they have two arms, two legs, and they only have three fingers, according to some people, four, whatever, to other people, but really kind of very close to what we are. You know, in reptilians, we have reptiles here on Earth. So, you know, how is it that these other planets would have to be pretty close to Earth? Well, Antonio Paris really goes into depth in describing these systems and really what's behind it. And he also gets into the heavy duty stuff of actual travel. And he mentions one of my favorite things, which is the inverse square law. I love it. And I use this as an argument about EMF detectors and ghost investigation. But it essentially uses that to describe radio signals and how they would eventually become indistinguishable and would be so faint, even a few light years away, that it's pretty much impossible that anybody could really know what's going on unless they were searching specifically for these things. But he talks about transportation, you know, and the what it would take for us to travel through space and some of the things facing us. And he also gets into what's really going on. He is part of the Mars One program that's essentially trying to send a human to Mars or other equipment to Mars. And so he's in the know about all this stuff about space travel. So he really spells out what the current technology is, what it's going to take for us to be able to travel in space, and really paints this picture of UFOs and extraterrestrials and the kind of the culture behind it, what our beliefs are, what our thought processes are as a UFO community, but then also gives us the science behind it. The reality, unfortunately, kind of doesn't match what we think. And it is, again, it's a little skeptical. So if you are a UFO believer, this is going to be a little hard for you to read. You might throw it up against the wall. But for me, I'm in the middle of all this stuff. I'm always balanced-minded. And it was a very good read, and I learned a lot of great information. And I'm already a little skeptical about a lot of this stuff. I'm probably more skeptical than a believer because more people seem to be more believers than skeptics. So you kind of have to balance the fight. And I learned a lot of great information from this book. And again, the science is there. His resources are there. This isn't an opinion-based book. This is a science-based book. So if you're into that, put it on your favorites list or try to find one at a bookstore, used bookstore, I don't know, whatever. Get it. Great book. Again, Space Science by Antonio Paris, this week's book of the week. And I've gone over my time. I'm going to have to pay out of my pocket. But that's it. That's a show. Well, that's not how I normally close a show. You know that. And again, if you have any information about paranormal conferences, conventions, and you don't see it on my website, paranewsinsider.com/events, let me know and I'll get it up there. I'll talk about it here. I didn't talk about that this week, kind of ran over in time, but a lot of great information. I hope you learned something tonight, or I hope at least I opened your mind to something or made you think about stuff. That's really my job here. That's my hope. That I just get you to consider something or to think something that maybe you didn't think of before or think of things in a different way. So again, big thanks to Cindy, my producer. Should be a pretty decent show for her to edit tonight, I hope. Always, thank you for your hard work, Cindy. You do a fantastic job, and I'm proud to be a part of WCJV. And to Dita in the chat room, as always, and looks like we're missing somebody there still. And everybody that listened in live or otherwise, I appreciate it very much. And I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, Don't Stop Believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.